Bob Duff is the state Senate majority leader. Really wanted to have you on. I don't think everyone quite comprehends the magnitude of this ruling. I know a lot of people think just because we're in Connecticut, everybody's safe, but there's huge ramifications, especially if you travel outside of the state.
Right. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And, you know, I would just say this, is that the Supreme Court has put two bad decisions in 2 days. They're 0-2. They made the country less safe yesterday with the decision on guns. They have taken away women's rights with today's decision on Roe. And, you know, Connecticut is safe right now. But as I like to say to people, we're only election away from losing those rights. Because if everything now is in the state's hands and the state makeup of the legislature changes or the governor changes, those rights are in jeopardy. So it's really important for people to get out and vote. It's really important for people to look at the candidates and don't just – if a candidate says to you, I have no intention of changing any laws, that's code for I don't really believe in a woman's right to choose. If you hear a candidate saying, I support – women's health care, women's reproductive rights, a woman's right to choose, safe and accessible abortion, that means that a woman has a champion on their side. Somebody who says, I have no intention of changing the laws, it's already set in Connecticut, that's code, and be very suspicious about that. It's almost like our gun laws, same kind of thing. Are we going to fight for gun laws that protect people, or are we going to do a wink and a nod and make Connecticut less safe?
You know, the irony, obviously, of, you know, the Senate coming up with a bipartisan gun package, while at the same time the Supreme Court is allowing concealed carry. You know, it almost seems like people on the right, Bob, from what I can tell, because if you look at any poll, the majority of people in this country are pro-abortion. They're pro-choice.
Yep.
And it's a small fraction of the Republican Party that is hell-bent on, again, sort of incorporating, you know, again, they talk about, you know, liberal ideology, but this is just straight-up conservative ideology. Obviously, this is, let's just say what it is. I mean, this is a Christian thing, and that's why we're where we're at here. And so again, when people are talking about their ideals, you know, it, to me, again, I just see the irony in Republicans joining, not a lot of them, but enough to pass a gun bill.
Yep.
I mean, again, we're trying to make people safer, and obviously, as you just said, neither of the Supreme Court rulings make people safer. They make it worse. And again, I think for anybody, and Bob, this drives me nuts, but this misconception that, I mean, women are not using abortion as birth control.
Right.
I don't know how else to stress that to people. If you look statistically, it's generally older women with children who are getting abortions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, all right, let's talk about the gun law. We're expecting here in Connecticut that also is going to be challenged, the concealed carry law.
Well, it could be. I mean, yesterday's ruling, we don't have a law on that here in Connecticut. And Connecticut is an open carry state, actually, which is a little odd. But but nonetheless, we have some of the strongest gun laws in the country, and we're the fourth safest state in the nation. But, you know, what I think's going to happen is this is all getting teed up, right? This is, none of this is happening by accident. This is all on purpose. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have the conservative state legislatures, you know, what we think probably are crazy laws that almost like this one, which they did in Texas and Mississippi and other places, and they'll pass something on gay rights, some sort of equality issue that we'll all be aghast about because it's not our values. They'll pass something maybe on schools or education that we'll all be aghast about because it's not our values. But then what they'll do is they'll be very patient because they're very patient people, conservatives are very patient, and they'll just wait for those things to tick up to the Supreme Court. and they'll just wait for those rights to be taken away one by one by one by one by one. And that's what people should get ready for. But the what people can do is they can vote, and they can get other people to vote. The best way for change is at the ballot box. And whether that's here in Connecticut to make sure that we continue to have legislators who are pro-choice and pro-equality and pro-equity and for, you know, everyone, not taking away people's rights. And they can also we can also work around the country to do the same thing. I mean, you look at like Texas and Georgia and other places that, you know, after the 2020 election put in these draconian bills about taking away people's voting rights. I mean, it's the antithesis of what everything our country stands for is in voting. And so, again, the same type of thing. So you're talking about voting rights and gay rights and racial issues, same-sex marriage, maybe interracial marriage, all these types of things that we thought at one point were safe are now on the table.
Yeah, it's got to be very concerning for people. I remember 2016. My mom's a Trump supporter, and my wife explained that this day was going to come, and my mom said, "But isn't that settled law?" And my wife is a lawyer, and my wife explained the process exactly like this, how it could be undone. And I just, you know, unfortunately, I feel like so many people don't understand that. Again, for a lot of people, especially people on the right who enjoy all the liberties, the liberal liberties that we get, they'll say they're not for it. And now that it's gone, they're like, oh, I didn't even think something like that was possible. So you're exactly right. Vote. There's a couple more things I want to talk to you about, including what this means at a national level. We've got to take a quick break, Bob, and then we'll get back and get you back to doing all your fine work. So Bob Duff, I'm on the line with Bob Duff, the state Senate Majority Leader. Now, Bob, when this thing first got leaked, you guys passed a bill basically protecting abortion providers and the idea that they could be prosecuted out of state. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
And let me ask you this, because again, you're obviously crossing state lines with this. How exactly would that work? And could there be a challenge to, I would assume, but could there be a challenge to that? Are you guys expecting one?
Well, I don't know. I mean, actually, as we said, everything's on the table at this point. I mean, eroding rights. I mean, it's amazing how the other side talks about personal freedom all the time, and then, you know, on one of the biggest ones, like reproductive rights or even same-sex marriage, we're still fighting those issues, and we're now vilifying transgender people, which is such a small group of people in our country, and we turn them into, you know, a big bad monster. But you know, here in the law that we passed this year, We're one of the first states to actually pass it, which basically says that if somebody comes to Connecticut for an abortion, if they're a Texas resident, they come out to Connecticut for an abortion, we won't hand over those records to the state of Texas. And we're not going to hand over the doctor's information either. And we also expanded who can perform abortions. And it's not because anybody likes an abortion. I mean, assuming most, you know, I know most women do not want to get an abortion, but it's something, it's part of their healthcare decisions. And so it's part of that process. And so what we're trying to see, and we're already seeing it now, is that people from other states are coming to Connecticut. It's very difficult to get an appointment. And you're going to see that probably, you know, in states where it's still legal and accessible versus the other states. So it's, again, going to turn into, if you have means, you can come to Connecticut. If you don't have means, you can't come to Connecticut because you have to fly here, you have to make an appointment, all those kinds of things. You have to wait. So it's this is really just a terrible decision. But, you know, in Connecticut, we're going to keep, you know, abortion safe and legal. But, again, we're only as good as the legislature we have and the governor we have.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I got to say, and I didn't vote for Ned Lamont. I didn't vote for Bob either. I think Ned Lamont's done a really good job. I think the Democrats, and I think most people have to admit, given the circumstances in the last couple of years. You guys have done a really good job. Obviously, inflation is something you guys don't control, and I know you're doing the best you can to get these prices down. There are several races for national office, and obviously one for a statewide office, being the governor's race. We haven't had any Republican in Washington since 2009. Do you think this seals the deal here in Connecticut, that the chances of us sending a representative to Washington, D.C., in light of this, probably takes that possibility to zero?
Of having somebody who's...
A Republican. Chance a Republican to win a national election coming out of Connecticut?
Oh, in Connecticut, like one of our congressional folks or whatever?
Yeah.
I think, you never know, right? I mean, because the rhetoric that's used all the time, and but I think we have a very strong congressional delegation right now, and I think that our congressional delegation will prevail. Thankfully, we've done work to expand voting rights, not retract it, so that it doesn't make it harder for people to vote and depress the turnout. But you never know. You have to work. You can't take anything for granted. And, you know, again, elections have consequences. I mean, let's go back to 2016 for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was a number of people who wanted to send a message, and they either didn't vote or they voted for Trump to send Hillary a message because they thought she was going to win. And that certainly impacted things. And then you also had Russian interference with Trump, which is totally illegal. And that, I'm sure, helped him because he only won by a bare minimum on the Electoral College. And even before, they had Mitch McConnell, who wouldn't let Merrick Garland get a hearing as Supreme Court Justice on a third year of the Obama presidency. So, you know, you've got all these things that have happened that have, and then the rush job to get Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court before Trump, before the election in 2020. I mean, so you look at these things in as a whole, and it just doesn't smell right, and it just is cheating, and it's not how we are as a country and what we do. But these are the new tactics on the right because this is all they got.
And they try to act like it's the Democrats who are anti-American and doing all the shady things. And you're exactly right. It's been them over and over and over again. And again, we're talking about issues where the overwhelming majority, including of Republicans, strongly feel that Roe v. Wade should stay intact.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the country support, and this is like not, the majority of the country supports Roe v. Wade, Democrats and Republicans and unaffiliates. The majority of the country supports gun legislation that keeps people safe and ends these mass shootings. But yet we have, you know, senators and U.S. House members who believe something else. And now we got Supreme Court members who are so radicalized that they believe that we should be going backwards and that literally women should be barefoot and pregnant.
Unfortunately, and this definitely sends that message. Bob Duff, State Senate Majority Leader, I really appreciate you coming on, especially on short notice, Bob. You're always good to this radio station. We certainly appreciate it. Please keep up the good fight for us. My guest, Jim Cameron from the Commuter Action Group. Jim advocates for Connecticut rail riders. He writes a weekly column in the Connecticut Mirror called Talking Transportation. And Jim, you asked a question, and I think it's a good one. Why not mention the marijuana?
Joe, that's a good question, and I think it's not necessarily a huge draw right now to Connecticut because you can legally use marijuana in Connecticut. You can possess it even without having a medical license, but you can't buy it in this state. So there are some privately run tourism websites, one of which I found, that talks about coming to Connecticut and enjoying a little toke on a marijuana while you're sitting on the beach or touring a Mystic Seaport after you've had an edible. Connecticut still isn't selling it legally, so it's not that much of a draw. But another year from now, you'll probably see marijuana dispensaries like you see in Massachusetts in many places across Connecticut. So it will be a tourism draw.
As well, it should be in the article, and I love your writing, Jim. You're one of my favorites. You point out Colorado, which is one of the first states to legalize cannabis. they've basically paid for their education department for years with all of the money that they're making off marijuana. And fortunately, I know there was a lot of concern that there would be all these people with weed problems, and that hasn't happened either.
Well, I can't speak to the increased visits to doctor's office or psychiatrist from people who were abusing legal marijuana in Colorado. I mean, that's a problem. So is problem drinking. But, you know, I mean, the fact is that it's legal, that it is a $40 billion business across the United States. And there are a lot of states that are raking in a lot of tax money from people who want to use marijuana legally, and they're willing to pay for it. Now, in Connecticut, there are already a number of towns and cities which have passed bans on potential sale of marijuana, you know, even though it hasn't started here yet. They're already opting out of that provision, and they're bypassing thousands and thousands of dollars a week in tax revenue. You know, kind of holding on to their puritanical roots, I guess.
Well, it kind of reminds me of with the casino, where, you know, nobody seemed to want a casino because, again, like that element, people are like, oh, it's going to be like Atlantic City. It's going to be all mobsters and bad guys and muggings, and it's not like that at all. It's actually a nice destination in Connecticut.
It is, and if people want to go up there and throw money away in the slots, you know, and have a good time, and that's their idea of entertainment, God bless them. And the Indians, the Native Americans that own either operate or license those casinos to operators, they're raking in a lot of money from people that are looking for that kind of experience. So, you know, in the town where I live, we have 16 liquor stores. 16 liquor stores in a town of 20,000, but we're not going to have a marijuana dispensary. and you know, my town is looking to, you know, save money and reduce taxes. So I'm going to have to either go next door to the next city or, you know, get on 95 and drive a little bit to find marijuana if that's what I'm looking for. So I just think it's kind of crazy that we're going to have this patchwork quilt kind of approach. But, you know, we're already trying to draw tourists to Connecticut, and legal marijuana is something that Connecticut's had almost for a year now, and it's something of a draw, even though it's got to be BYO.
So I had an interesting conversation yesterday, and I saw your article, and that's why I was like, I got to get Jim on to talk about this. A friend of mine lives in California, and she told me she wants to get her marijuana card. And is having difficulty doing it. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. I looked it up, and recreational and medicinal marijuana are legal in the state of California. But she's in a similar situation to what you're saying, where it's legal, you can get it, you just can't buy it anywhere around here. And that's...
In California?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly where in California she lives. And she's an oddly private person, which is why I don't know where she lives. But, yeah, I said to her, I'm like, you asked your doctor for a medical marijuana card. She has, you know, chronic pain or, you know, whatever the weed people say. And I'm kidding. Yeah. And I thought, you know, it's funny. My wife's a lawyer. We've lived in Connecticut almost our entire lives. Both were born here. And I said to my wife this afternoon, I go, do you even know what Connecticut's marijuana law is? And she was like, I think it's legal to a certain amount. And I thought, my goodness, I'm not even sure if people even know that marijuana is legal in Connecticut. Not everybody's aware of that, the fact that you can possess up to 1.5 ounces of marijuana legally here in Connecticut.
Yep. Well, it was kind of that piece of news may have got lost in the pandemic when it happened about a year ago. You know, your friend in California is probably just living in the wrong town, or she doesn't want to, you know, drive next door, because I know that there are plenty of people in California that can buy medical marijuana at legal dispensaries. Even if they don't have a medical marijuana card, they can go and pay, you know, full retail. the benefit of having a medical marijuana card, even in Connecticut, is you do not have to pay the exorbitant tax on it that the recreational user has to pay. You know, it's treated like a medicine. You're not going to be able to write it off on your expenses at the end of the year as a deductible tax expense, but having a medical marijuana card, proving that you have a medical need for marijuana as a therapy, will save you a lot of money. And there are a lot of doctors in Connecticut. They're registered with the state that you can find by just Googling that question. And they will, for a fee, meet you, diagnose you, and write you a medical marijuana card prescription.
Jim, are we giving out, like, top secrets here? Is that what we're doing?
I don't think so, Joe. I mean, I'm happy to talk about this. I think it's kind of a well-kept secret. I hope it doesn't shock some of your audience. And the reason I'm writing about it, you know, I'm supposed to be writing about transportation. And the other part of the article that I mentioned in there, you know, deals with the fact that, you know, hey, you don't drive drunk. You don't drive when you've got a six-pack open in your car. Neither should you be consuming legal marijuana and in an impaired fashion, endangering yourself or anybody else. Also, even if you want to go and buy marijuana in a state where you can, like Massachusetts, up in Springfield, there are any number of stores there. There are others in Great Barrington. There are some in Boston. It is not legal for you to bring that marijuana back into Connecticut, even though it's legal in Connecticut. When you cross a state line, that is a violation of federal law. Now, I don't think the state police are setting up roadblocks on I-91, inspecting vehicles to see if they've got, you know, a couple of gummies or, you know, a half ounce of marijuana that they purchased up in Massachusetts. I mean, the whole idea behind decriminalization or legalization of marijuana was to let the police department work on serious crimes, not chase after guys who were, you know, sitting on a beach smoking a joint.
Jim, we got to take a quick break. I want to ask you about, you know, just before, I want to say a couple of months ago, there was the issue here in Connecticut about gifting marijuana to people, and that sort of became a huge deal. Quick break. We'll be right back with Jim Cameron. On the line with Jim Cameron from the Commuter Action Group. Writes a column in the Connecticut Mirror called Talking Transportation. We were talking about your article, Marijuana Tourism. And I actually just looked up the 22 towns which have already banned the sale or don't want a dispensary in town. I noticed all 22 are kind of higher end towns in Connecticut. And their thought, obviously, is, you know, the cities is where we'll open them up, because that's just how kind of this works.
Yeah, they don't want the riffraff coming to town looking to, you know, score a lid or something. I don't know. I mean, my town is one of them, but I don't want to get into that debate.
And listen, it's their right, and I totally get it. I was curious, and I just looked it up, and I was like, oh, why am I surprised by this list of towns? Of course they don't want that there.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at the towns, you can see that there probably is not much of a drive. You know, just get on 95, go 5 miles, and you'll find a community where they are selling it legally.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like this is going to be a big nuisance to anybody. Now, I in your latest article, you mentioned you got a little pushback from some of your fans who didn't like that you wrote that.
Well, there were some people wondering, you know, what's the connection? This is supposed to be about transportation. And the point I was making is that from a tourism point of view, if the state is spending $3 million to promote Connecticut as a place to visit, come to the beaches, visit the history, et cetera, they're missing out by not, mentioning one of the attractions and one of the things that differentiates Connecticut from a number of states, and that is legal marijuana. Also, the other angle, you know, sound like I'm talking to my editor here, justifying this. So it's a here's the transportation angle, boss.
Right.
There's a lot of traffic coming in and out of, you know, Massachusetts from Connecticut. So, you know, you mentioned earlier there are 52,000 legal registered medical marijuana patients in Connecticut. Now, from a recreational point of view, I would guess nobody has done a census on this or a survey, but I would guess that the number of recreational marijuana users is probably in the hundreds of thousands. And right now, they're probably on I-91 driving up to Massachusetts, or they're going over to driving up Route 7, enjoying a beautiful day, driving up to, you know, legal medical marijuana, or not medical, recreational dispensaries for marijuana in the Berkshires. And that's extra traffic on the road. I mean, I heard the traffic report about I-95. It's a Friday afternoon. No big news, folks. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic all the way from Greenwich to Bridgeport. That never changes. But how many of those people are, driving looking to score some marijuana for the weekend instead of trying to get home from the office?
It's a really good point. Now, I mentioned medical marijuana products may not be gifted. You cannot gift it in any way, shape, or form. You can't take a donation for it. And there was a lot of hullabaloo with all that, and I don't understand why. I'm all for legal marijuana. I think it's fine. It's, you know, again, it's one of those things, Jim, where if you know what it's all about and what it does, and you don't buy into the rhetoric, you know, it's fine. You do make a great point, by the way, and I'd like to reiterate: I know it feels different than alcohol. Don't smoke weed and drive. Definitely don't do that.
Anything that's going to distract your attention is better left for sitting at home or sitting on a beach.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Jim, we should hang out sometime. That's all I'm saying.
Joe, it's great to hear you in drive time. I'm happy that you're there sitting in for Paul.
I'm Joe McGuire in for Paul Pacelli. Thank you so much for spending your Friday afternoon with us. Now, Disney's been in the crosshairs of late. They spoke out against Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill. And once again, they've ruffled some feathers. This new Buzz Lightyear movie, first and foremost, Tim Allen, who's a very outspoken conservative actor, was not asked to voice Buzz Lightyear. Disney explained it's because Tim Allen's portrayal of Buzz Lightyear in the movies was kind of goofier and dumb, was actually the word that they used. This character is meant to be a little bit more serious. But there's a lesbian kiss in the movie between two cartoon characters. I'll repeat that. Two cartoon characters. A theater in Oklahoma put a sign up suggesting they would fast forward through the scene. People thought they were joking. They weren't. Here's the thing. Buzz Lightyear has underwhelmed at the box office for Pixar. It's made only $51 million so far. People are going to see the movie, okay? Here's the reason why the movie's not doing well. It's not that good. You know what movie also didn't do great? Cars 3. In 2017, also underwhelmed at the box office. It was another terrible sequel, and people were kind of over it. If you want to accuse Disney of everything, of anything at all, rather than saying they're woke, you should call them out for the constant cash grabs. They've put out like 4 or 5 Frozen shorts since that movie came out. I own all of them because of my daughters, not me. Disney's been accused of folding to the woke left. Last few movies have had leading characters that are not white. That's not being woke. For 100 years, every Disney movie was full of white characters or talking animals. it's okay if the next Disney princess is Hispanic or wears glasses or maybe she's autistic. It's a cartoon. It's a cute cartoon. Two cartoons kissing. I've seen Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd kiss. Nobody freaked out. Now that's bestiality, for crying out loud. Listen, having ethnic characters in a Disney movie isn't being woke. Making gay and transgender people feel welcome at their park is not being woke. It's marketing. They're trying to attract new business. I don't think white people understand this. Not everybody's as crazy about Disney as you are. Yeah. Other people don't quite see it that way. I mean, they get the wholesome family. But again, the characters for many years were just all white, and now they're not, and that's upsetting some people. A lesbian kiss between two cartoon characters, it's not a sex scene. And that's not how kids become gay. Kids don't watch cartoons, see two lesbians kiss, and think, I should be gay. There's no liberal agenda. I've checked. I mean, my goodness gracious, people, the reason that we're that all of this activity is happening on the left is because of the reaction to the right. They're just people. There are people who live a different kind of life than you do. They're still human beings. They're still people. And if you're a Christian, I think you're pretty sure you're supposed to love those people. Not to mention, we're all Americans. So let's stop with the Disney being woke. Disney's got a good marketing team that knows they need to find new people to watch their movies so they can make even more money. It's not about being woke, and it's just to make sure that they get everybody's money. A lot of companies are like that. I think the craziest thing I've seen in the last 5 years was a commercial for Johnny Walker, the alcohol. In the commercial, maybe you've seen it, there's a bunch of people building the original distillery. It's supposed to be like 120, 30 years ago. And there's a couple of black fellas in the commercial. And they're helping the Walker family build this thing. And then when it's over, everybody grabs a glass of Johnny Walker and they toast. I do not believe in the real story that's how things played out. Is Johnny Walker woke or just historically inaccurate? It's marketing, people. It's all it is. None of these companies are woke. They just need more money.